This podcast is, of course, made possible through the support of our members and from Dartmouth Hitchcock. Imagine nationally ranked healthcare in your community with convenient locations throughout northern New England. World-class providers are closer than you think. Visit dartmouthhitchcock.org to learn more. Dartmouth Hitchcock is here.
Support for The Exchange weekly New Hampshire News Roundup is made possible by Eastern Bank. We're here, you're first.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Josh Rogers. This is The Exchange. It's our weekly New Hampshire News Roundup. A turbulent week in presidential politics. Donald Trump's lewd comments and alleged conduct have some Republicans, including Senator Kellyanne, withdrawing support.
This is more important to me that my daughter know when she's old enough to understand this, where I stood, than winning any election.
Other Republicans, like gubernatorial candidate Chris Sununu, condemned Trump's comments.
They were disgusting. They were reprehensible. There's no place for those type of comments in public discourse at all.
But still plan to vote for him. Democrats, meanwhile, face their own challenges, including hacked emails revealed by WikiLeaks, which show Hillary Clinton's campaign's anxieties about their candidate and about New Hampshire. And First Lady Michelle Obama pays a visit to Southern New Hampshire University to go after Donald Trump and observe this election's ugly turn.
But New Hampshire, yeah, be clear, this is not normal. This is not politics as usual.
It's our weekly New Hampshire News Roundup here on The Exchange. Give us a call. The Exchange number is 1-800-892-6477. Email us exchange@nhpr.org. Or we're at NHPR Exchange on Facebook or Twitter. Good morning. Our guests are Ella Nilsson of the Concord Monitor, Dean Spiliotis of Southern New Hampshire University, and Trent Spinner of the Union Leader and New Hampshire Sunday News. Good day, all. You know, I hesitate to use terms like unprecedented, but we have one major party nominee facing multiple allegations of sexual misconduct, which he denies. We've got hacked emails from the campaign of another. Maybe Russia did the hacking, maybe not. If this were in a novel, wouldn't it seem like the author was pushing it? And by the way, we have a fresh poll out this morning from WBUR and Mass Inc. that finds 83% of local voters don't see Donald Trump as a role model for young people, and that 69% don't believe Hillary Clinton is trustworthy. What do you think, listeners? Let us know. And all of this is spilling over the transom in our local races, where battles for statewide office remain very tight. Let's start with Donald Trump. Everyone's heard of him, I trust. Dean, he was here a week ago. His last campaign stop before the release of that tape where he talks about groping and kissing women without their consent. Trump will be back tomorrow. A lot has happened in the meantime, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's just been remarkable to watch. You know, not only is he, some say, tripling down on the strategy of bringing Bill Clinton's past and Hillary Clinton's handling of his past into the mix, and they say they're going to continue to do that. He's declared war on the Speaker of the House, Paul Ryan, the leader of Republicans in Congress. And some people are calling it a scorched earth strategy. Other people are saying it's designed intentionally to depress voter turnout, that will help Trump while simultaneously whipping up his base and hoping to maximize turnout among the people who support him. So it's not anything that I've ever seen before. And I think a lot of people are just kind of unhappy with the discourse. I've heard lots of anecdotal stories of people having trouble sleeping, turning the television off, not being able to focus on this stuff. It really has been a brutal week, and shows no signs of letting up over the next 3 weeks.
And to Dean's point, I mean, just to give an example of how brutal of a week this has been, you know, Kelly Ayotte made all this news saying that she couldn't vote for Donald Trump, that she was going to write in Mike Pence. She was on the news, but what was happening below the kind of the news radar was that all of these lifelong Republicans, former elected officials, party operatives, people who have dedicated themselves to the Republican Party for their entire life have said, you know what, I also can't vote for Donald Trump. They're not making huge news because they're speaking privately. But you have people who have literally spent their life getting Republicans elected who are now saying, I'm going to vote for Hillary Clinton. It is truly unprecedented.
So, Ella, what do you think? You were Michelle Obama was up here to rally Democrats. I mean, was the crowd there mainly, you know, kind of card-carrying Democrats, or were there some people who were, I've had it with Trump?
Yeah, no, it was mostly the card-carrying Democrats, and it was kind of funny because I talked to a lot of voters, mostly women and of all different ages at the event. And when I even mentioned Trump's name, a lot of them were just like, you know what, we don't want to go there. Like, people are saying it's a surprise that these new allegations are a surprise, but we're not surprised by this. We thought, one woman said that, you know, I thought he was a vile human being for a long time. So I don't think anybody was surprised by those allegations, at least in the Michelle Obama crowd. I think it's going to be interesting. So Donald Trump is slated to return to New Hampshire this weekend with a visit to Portsmouth, I believe, on Saturday. I think that from recent some of the national reporters yesterday, he had a whole slew of events. And I think the tone of his events have changed again. You know, a few weeks ago, sort of before the debates, he was putting on kind of this more kind of structured, you know, following the script, following the teleprompter, a little bit more on message. Now, you know, he's been saying, you know, if we don't win this election, I don't know what I'm going to do. And really kind of like casting blame on people, really kind of riling people up. So I think it's a very marked change in tone.
Well, he said in his own words, he sort of took the shackles off after you know, sort of being cut loose by Paul Ryan. But why don't we take a listen to what Michelle Obama said yesterday at Southern New Hampshire University?
And I know it's a campaign, but this isn't about politics. It's about basic human decency. It's about right and wrong. And we simply cannot endure this or expose our children to this any longer, not for another minute, and let alone for 4 years. Now is the time for all of us to stand up and say, enough is enough. This has got to stop right now.
All right, that was Michelle Obama speaking yesterday at Southern New Hampshire University. And I was reading a write-up of her speech by Rebecca Traister in New York Magazine, and she described it as, quote, the most unapologetic and powerful feminist speech of the campaign, noting that it came not from the first woman who may end up being president, Hillary Clinton, but from First Lady Michelle Obama. I mean, you were there, Elle. I mean, does that takeaway square with how people were reacting in the room?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, people were kind of calling back to the First Lady as she was delivering this speech. Very, very emotional, very intense speech. A couple of people in the audience were saying, preach, First Lady, as she was getting sort of more and more into the speech. So people were responding very well. On Twitter, the response was, you know, just a lot of people saying, maybe Michelle Obama should run for president, because I think that she is in sort of the best position to give a speech like this. I mean, she's not directly in the campaign. She is a very popular first lady. And, you know, her whole sort of theme is, you know, when they go low, we go high. It was very much taking the high road. But she was really able to kind of eviscerate Donald Trump without ever even mentioning his name during the speech, which was kind of remarkable.
So, Dean, were you there? Yeah. So,
no, I was not there. I actually watched it. I was unable to attend, and I watched the entire speech on the web a little bit later in the day. And it was a very personal speech, a very emotional speech. It's just remarkable to me that probably the two most powerful surrogates for Hillary Clinton are Barack and Michelle Obama. I can't think of the last time a sitting president and a sitting first lady were out there hammering the nominee of the other party on a regular basis. I heard Barack Obama last night at a state party dinner. I think it was in Ohio, but I can't recall. And he was also hammering both the Republican Party in Congress for being obstructionist and Donald Trump for his behavior. So, you know, a lot of people say that if you look at Michelle Obama's convention speech, I think it was on a Monday night in the convention over the summer, and this speech, that the two of them together are, you know, make her probably the single most effective and powerful surrogate. And I think Elle is right. My sense of just from watching the video, the crowd, it really was sort of a partisan crowd. It was geared at mobilization, getting millennials, a lot of young people. I know a lot of my female students at SNHU were very excited about an opportunity to meet with her and see her. And that's what Hillary Clinton needs, that given how she's doing with her struggles with motivating younger voters. And we've seen them do similar things at UNH to try to get those students involved as well.
I mean, is there a sense that New Hampshire millennials are particularly recalcitrant in regard to this, given we've had Elizabeth Warren, we've had Bernie Sanders a couple times, now Michelle Obama? Or is it simply New Hampshire's a place where there's a lot at stake because we've got competitive races up and down the ticket and potentially the balance of the Senate, a little bit of both?
Well, I think you bring up a good point that millennials are important in this election. And what the Clinton campaign – what was fascinating for me to watch yesterday was as Michelle Obama was speaking, the Clinton campaign was live streaming this from their own – they were doing a Facebook Live essentially for millennials who couldn't make it. And it started out – that's how I watched it. It started out with a couple of hundred people. But within, I would say, 2 minutes of the speech, when national reporters and others were starting to figure out, hey, this is actually going to be a big moment in the campaign, and it spread virally so fast that within 5 minutes, we were looking at thousands of people. And I just looked at it again. Millions of people ended up watching that. And that's the difference between having a well-run campaign where you have a – like the Clinton campaign had. They had a three-camera shoot live streaming this event versus the Trump campaign where they're not doing this. And so you want to talk about reaching millennials. The Clinton campaign was – they did a really good job of doing that yesterday, whereas the Trump campaign yesterday, they didn't.
It was also interesting. Yesterday, Donald Trump sent out an email. His press team sent out an email about sort of what – I think he had a speech geared toward what Donald Trump will do for millennials. I haven't really heard him kind of making a specific reach out to millennial voters before, so that kind of was interesting to me. But in the other thing that I will note was that in the line waiting to get into Michelle Obama's event yesterday, I did talk to a few millennial voters and college kids at SNHU, and a couple of them said that they were going to vote, but a few of them also didn't really seem to be totally tuning into the election and hadn't really been following the events of the past week.
I mean, one thing that's interesting is that one thing that Michelle Obama said yesterday was, I can't stop thinking about this, meaning Trump's appearance on this tape with Billy Bush, some of the comments that he's made, that, you know, the way in which this event has become sort of a trigger for a, you know, heightened public discussion of these issues. We see that among, you know, an edit board that in the Monitor where Second District Congresswoman Annie Custer, who's talked about her experiences, you know, being, you know, unwanted sexual touching in her life, you know, divulged an assault on Capitol Hill by, you know, famed now deceased South African surgeon Christian Barnard. I mean, what do you make of that, Dean?
Yeah, it certainly has. You know, we've seen a number of women come forward in the last couple of days who said that Trump's response to Anderson Cooper's question about whether or not he actually had physically engaged in the behavior that was described in the Access Hollywood tape, and he said no, he had not, and they felt since you know they claimed that you know they had been victims of his, and they wanted to now step forward because they were just outraged that he would say he didn't engage in that behavior. And what I've noticed is, you know, I'm a big believer in the idea that partisans use a pretty heavy cognitive dissonance filter whenever they process information. So there are literally two conversations going on about this now. There are a conversation among Democrats who view Trump's admission as an admission that of this is his standard operating procedure, that he engages in sexual assault because he's a celebrity. And you have Republicans who have bought into the sort of locker room banter, not harmless, but locker room banter that doesn't actually signify actual assault or behavior. So, you know, once again, given how people are processing that tape, they're sort of talking past each other. So there is this heightened conversation, but it seems almost as though there are sort of two different conversations, which I think is unfortunate.
Well, and I think that cognitive dissonance applies also to how people are interpreting new information that's coming out. I mean, people who might be predisposed to vote for Hillary Clinton, vote Democratic, see this as, people who are coming forth in light of comments that Donald Trump's made in denials. You know, some on the right would say that this is all proof of a kind of conspiracy to sink Trump, involving the media, involving the Clinton campaign. You know, it is interesting. But, you know, not all and one thing that that conversation has blotted out a bit has been the conversation regarding some of the WikiLeaks emails coming out of the Clinton campaign. You know, comments on Catholics by a top Clinton aide, some stuff about conflicts of interest involving the Clinton Foundation. You know, New Hampshire even came up in the recent leak. I know, Trent, that one particular email that posed a question about New Hampshire certainly caught the attention of the people at 100 William Loeb Drive. Who wrote that email and what did it say?
The email said, "What's wrong with the people of New Hampshire?" This was just days before the primary. Polling showed that Hillary Clinton was going to lose substantially here. And a Clinton ally, a former Obama administration official who's now the president of a liberal-leaning think tank in Washington who advises the Clinton campaign sent an email to the campaign chairman, John Podesta, and said, what's wrong with the people of New Hampshire? He never responded, so we don't know if the Clinton campaign, you know, what they thought about this. But it was fascinating to go in and see all the different interactions the different ways that people in the Clinton campaign were approaching New Hampshire. You can see early on there's actually an exchange between Robbie Mook, her campaign manager, and and Hillary Clinton herself, where Mook is saying, hey, you know, your favorability numbers are down in New Hampshire. Take that with a grain of salt because I'm not sure that this poll is correct. And you see Clinton responding, I understand that. You know, it's tough to win votes up there, so we're just going to have to work really hard. And that was early on. That was in 2015. And that gets to the point in 2016 where you see people in the Clinton orbit. This was not a staffer or anything like that saying, you know, what's wrong with those people up there?
And, you know, in the wake of those comments, you know, Republicans were eager to seize upon this as, you know, further indications of what they see as, you know, the Clinton campaign and Hillary Clinton's kind of perfidy, former Governor Sununu. You know, the revelations that reveal that Democrats have a complete lack of respect for New Hampshire voters and New Hampshire values. It's just one more reason New Hampshire voters must vote the Republican ticket, including Trump, Ayotte, and Sununu. So that was what former Governor Sununu had to say about this. I mean, in some sense, you read the comments about what's wrong with New Hampshire. I mean, obviously, the Clinton folks were concerned, and justifiably. I mean, you know, Sanders won with considerable ease at the end of the day. I'm not sure I divined anything that was terribly disrespectful, you know, but, you know, that's for voters to decide.
No, and I think that what the emails show is that the Clinton campaign knew they were going to have to work really hard. They did try to work really hard, and it just didn't work out for them, and they were frustrated. I think that this email, the What's Wrong with People in New Hampshire, is an example of the frustration that the Clinton campaign had back during the primary, where they were down 20, 25 points in some polls. And
they thought New Hampshire was going to be their sort of firewall.
Exactly. And you have to remember that the Democratic establishment in New Hampshire came out very early in support of Hillary Clinton, the governor, the Democratic senator. Basically, all the important Democrats that you would need to win this election came out and before Bernie Sanders was even really
here. No, I did a story about the endorsement race in this, and it was a struggle to find you know, anyone with any kind of like portfolio, so to speak, who was an early supporter of Bernie Sanders. I mean, I remember former state senator Bert Cohen. You know, I interviewed him for this story, and he's like, you know, you don't understand, this is coming. And you know, I have to say I was skeptical, but he turned out to be right.
That's right. He did turn out to be right, and that was the challenge, I think, for a lot of the Bernie people who said we can't get any foothold here with the national Democratic committee because we're doing really well on the ground in New Hampshire. It's apparent that regular voters are interested in hearing our message. But you can see that the Clinton campaign was frustrated by that.
Tell us what you think. This is the weekly New Hampshire News Roundup. Join us. Exchange numbers 1-800-892-6477. WikiLeaks, Donald Trump, down ballot races, whatever's on your mind, give us a call 1-800-892-6477. Now, you know, the top of the ticket, I mean, from the start in a presidential year, the presumption is the top of the ticket's going to have a big effect of what happens down below. I mean, I have to say a lot more is spilling over the transom this year than many years. And, you know, the Senate race between Kelly Ayotte and Maggie Hassan is, you know, sort of exhibit A there. They were actually debating this morning on WGIR and we'll get to that in a minute. Do call us 1-800-892-6477, email at exchange, what's on your mind, presidential politics, down ballot, anything else, do call. We'll be right back after a short break. New Hampshire News Roundup on NHPR. I'm Josh Rogers. You can join us. Exchange numbers 1-800-892-6477. Email at exchange@nhpr.org or find us on Facebook or Twitter. Let's go to the phone. We have Roger on the line from Manchester. Roger, good morning.
Good morning to you. I just wanted to say I think when we're judging who we're going to vote for the presidential campaign, it's, I think Hillary is at a big disadvantage because she has, through WikiLeaks, the Democratic National Committee's emails, so we can, you know, criticize those or look into those, and whereas Donald Trump doesn't have the RNC out. And also, we have Hillary's tax exchanges or tax, you know, returns. We don't have them from Mr. Trump. And also, I was looking, and I don't know if this article is true, but I had seen, and maybe you can answer that. Remember when Alberto Gonzalez was the attorney general and they fired 8 U.S. attorneys?
Yes.
And my understanding is the RNC had emails, 22 million of them that were not available. Is that true? Do you know anything about that?
I don't, Roger. Thank you for your call. You know, Dean, what do you make to the larger point? I mean, do you think WikiLeaks do you get any sense this is actually penetrating to voters?
Well, I think some of it probably is, but I do think that it has been kind of overshadowed by the sort of larger dynamic surrounding, you know, Trump and the whole issue of his behavior and the kind of attack on his own party in Congress. But, you know, it certainly has caused a number of moments of discomfort for the Clinton campaign, and their strategy has sort of been to suggest, well, you know, we don't really know if these are, you know, these are accurate, or whether they've been doctored, or et cetera, who's, you know, why are the Russians behind this? So they've sort of raised some questions. I know with the Jennifer Palmieri, the communications director, like, had an email sort of criticizing conservative Catholicism, and she has said she doesn't recall that language or writing that. And so, you know, they're trying to kind of cast some doubt on this. It's certainly a complication, but given the current dynamic and the heavy focus on Trump, I think it's probably getting less attention than it might otherwise.
I spent hours going through those emails.
And people are doing that.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Hours going through the emails. And it's fascinating to see behind the scenes what's going on. And you see how kind of top heavy the Clinton campaign is. There was one email exchange. This was early on, and they were trying to get to Chappaqua, to her house in Chappaqua, for a debate prep. And there was a massive email exchange just about, I mean, these are like top Clinton people, just about what corner of what intersection they were going to meet for the pickup to get into a van to get – and I'm just thinking, man.
And about this, whether or not she should tell a joke, you know, these sorts of
– yeah.
They're overthinking it. You know, one thing I will say, and you know, I haven't read through them, but the others who have said that there's sort of less of Clinton in the emails. It's mainly her advisors, and so she seems perhaps was a little more circumspect about what she put into emails. You know, that may end up helping her a little bit, but there is this sort of circle of core advisors who are going back and forth.
It is 99% her advisors, her top advisors, and you can see them going back and forth. There are some they are talking about serious issues at some point, how to respond to you know, the all kinds of different national security things, and you'll see that there are different points of view amongst the advisors. And then what you'll see all of a sudden is Huma Abedin will get in and say two words: yes, no, let's move on this, you know, and basically end the conversation. And so Hillary Clinton isn't in the emails. There are a couple where she is, like that one where she's talking about how hard she's going to have to work in New Hampshire. But mainly it's Huma saying she wants this, she wants that. Everyone stop talking. Let's make a decision.
Well, I mean, in terms of your comment about being sort of top heavy, I mean, we can recall, you know, Mitt Romney's campaign, I'm forgetting the number, was it 14 or 21 people had to approve a tweet before it went out, you know, on Mitt Romney's official Twitter feed. And, you know, you can, you know, certainly Donald Trump is running a much different, more nimble, and more, you know, sort of chaotic campaign is sort of the polar opposite. Why don't we go back to the phones? We have Sue on the line from Northwood. Good day, Sue.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm fine.
Why are you calling?
I'm calling because a few minutes ago you had an exchange about how the whole Trump revelations were affecting women. And you had two men comment on it, and I think you've got a woman there on your panel.
You're perceptive, Sue. We do. And you know, we were talking to Ella. She was covering Michelle Obama yesterday. And so, Ella, you know, to Sue's point, do you have any reaction to Trump, you know,
well,
not as a reporter, as a woman? Is that what you want to know?
Yeah, because the men didn't hit how I feel about
it. How do you feel about it, Sue?
Well, it just has brought up things that happened long ago that were, you know, down in the basement of my memory, and they're fresh, and I'm indignant all over again.
Is that something, Ella, is that something you heard from women at the event?
Sure, Sue, and I'm sorry that this has brought perhaps painful memories back for you. You know, I didn't talk to anybody that personally yesterday had had sort of was experiencing the same sort of emotion where things have been brought up. But certainly, you know, Annie Custer talked about that. A lot of women, I think, on social media, you know, right after the you know initial video was released of Trump talking on Friday. There was a hashtag that went out and kind of caught fire on Twitter where women were just talking about their experiences being, you know, groped or sexually assaulted or intimidated in some ways of just, you know, men sort of having the upper hand. One of the things that I asked women yesterday, especially some of the older women in the line that I was talking to, was just sort of how they think women's place in the world and women's advancement has sort of moved along in you know the past few decades. And you know, even though a lot of them didn't really talk about sexual assault, they did say that they think that people are starting to open up about this more, people are starting to open up about their experiences more, and they do think that things have sort of come along for women. But certainly Michelle Obama addressed this in her speech yesterday, where she said, you know, this is something that women have been doing for decades, have just been kind of keeping their head underwater, been feeling the weight of this pressing down and sort of not being able to talk openly about their experiences, keeping it all inside. So I certainly think that it sounds like for you and for many other women, this did kind of bring up a lot of visceral memories that maybe you wouldn't have liked to have revisited.
All right. Thank you, Sue. And, you know, in addition to that, which is, you know, we'll see the you know, repercussions of that, you know, in our public policy potentially. I mean, you see movement on bills in Congress and in Concord to, you know, address issues around you know, sexual assault, abuse, discrimination, et cetera. You know, the whole Trump's shadow has been cast so heavily over the U.S. Senate race. And, you know, there's a debate this morning. Why don't we go to the tape of that, Kelly Ayotte and Maggie Hassan, this morning on WGIR.
But let me just be clear. To equate Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump in the same sentence is unacceptable. And I am very concerned. What you didn't hear my opponent say is why she supported Donald Trump for over a year as he made one sexist comment after the next, as he made one racist comment after the next, as he made fun of people with disabilities. He is a man who seems to think cruelty is a sport. And her support for him has been unacceptable.
All right. Rebuttal, Senator. Yeah.
Well, first of all, I've renounced Donald Trump's statements on many occasions on the issues that Governor Hassan has identified. And I've clearly said where I stand on Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. I won't be voting for either of them. And again, if you...
Be writing in Mike Pence?
I will be.
I was just... Go ahead.
And let me just say that... If you look at the issues that Governor Hassan has just talked about, recently she was interviewed by the Concord Monitor about Secretary Clinton's plan to bring 65,000 Syrian refugees here, and she would not answer where she stood on that.
All right. That was Senator Kellyanne and Governor Maggie Hassan debating this morning on WGIR. And, you know, it is interesting. I mean, both sides are looking to use the, you know, unpopular person at the top of their respective tickets as a cudgel. And, you know, Donald Trump is probably at the moment, you know, somebody who's the Democrats are more attracted with him at this moment than Republicans may have with Secretary Clinton. It was interesting, you know, it seems like longer ago, but I mean, it was only last weekend when, you know, Kelly Ayotte first said that, you know, she wasn't going to support Donald Trump. And she said it, you know, as a mom and an American. You know, I can't tolerate this. And then on Sunday, when she addressed the press for the first time, she said it was more important that her daughter know where she stood, you know, vis-a-vis Trump than winning any election. You know, the poll I cited earlier out from WBUR this morning asked the question, did Ayotte make the right move on Trump? And that poll found that 61% believe that Ayotte was correct to withdraw support. 30% believe she should have continued to back him. you know, how far, how much, I mean, are we just going to, is this, is Donald Trump, is this going to be a referendum on Donald Trump for the entirety here, Dean?
It's not clear to me. You know, my sense up until this last weekend was that Kellyanne had done a pretty good job of detaching the Senate race from all the controversy at the top of the ticket. You know, if nothing else, her finally cutting him loose in terms of her support, I think will make her life a lot less complicated over the next 3 weeks. Although, as we see, the Democrats are going to continue to try to tarnish her with the, you know, the connection to him that she had supported him for many months. You know, she's running ahead of Trump in New Hampshire. The race has been very close, point here or there, up or down for both of them.
Essentially,
you know, her goal all along has been to make the choice for senator a fundamentally different choice than whatever you do for president. And some people are suggesting we may see more split-ticket voting in this election than we've seen in a long time, where maybe people vote for Clinton or write someone else in and then jump over and vote for Ayotte. That's certainly Ayotte's hope. In contrast, you know, Democrats have had good margins in the last couple of presidential elections. I'm sure Maggie Hassan is hoping that that will continue to be the case. So, you know, I think that given the circumstances and how kind of hemmed in Ayotte has been by Trump, you know, sort of a reasonable thing for her to do at this point. The evidence on whether it's going to sort of be decisive for her, I think, is mixed. But I do think she has had some success at detaching the whole question of who do you vote for senator from the two very unpopular presidential nominees.
I mean, she seemed to have that before. I mean, while she was
she was running ahead of Trump even earlier.
But, you know, she's made what she wants to be sort of a clean break at this point. But she's alone among major Republicans in New Hampshire in taking that position. Chris Sununu, who's the gubernatorial nominee, the only other candidate for statewide office, remains supportive of Trump. You know, he spoke with NH1 News earlier this week on Trump. And why don't we take a listen to that?
He'll do anything to avoid talking about the issues. He'll do anything to avoid talking about what's important in our race, in our families' lives, in our businesses' lives. That's what this needs to be about, not about the disgusting negativity that we see at the national level on both sides. It's disgusting. There's no place for that here in New Hampshire.
All right, that was Chris Sununu. And the he was referring to was Democrat Colin Van Ostern. And Sununu was saying essentially he's using – Van Ostern is using the issue of Donald Trump as a way to get around – discussing the real issues. You know, Trent, what do you make of Sununu's stance on this? You know, good politics, given that, you know, it's a tight race, you need Republicans, and perhaps a little easier to pull off as a man, you know, rightly or wrongly politically?
Geez, I don't know. And as an outside observer, as someone who you know, is looking at these races and trying to figure out what's what, I think it'll be interesting for us and for political scientists to look back and see how much of an impact Trump really had, because we'll be able to compare the Ayotte race versus the Sununu race. It's funny. They both actually are using the same advisor. And, you know, the advisor said about the Ayotte race, you know, it's great that she dumped Trump. Now it lets her run her own campaign. And then on the Sununu, when he was talking about the Sununu race, he said, well, you know, it's his choice to make, and he's not going to dump Trump. So it will be.
I mean, they are separate. He's submitting separate bills to both of them. So, you
know. Yeah, exactly. So it'll be interesting to see just how much of an impact, like you guys were saying, Ayotte has been polling ahead of Trump. Sununu may need some of those Trump voters. I mean, if you really look at it, let's say there are three main types of voters in New Hampshire. There's a Democrat, a liberal. They're going to vote for Hillary Clinton and Maggie Hassan. There's a moderate. They may vote for Clinton. They may vote for Ayotte. And then there's a conservative. And what are they going to do? And that's really the question. If you're going to vote for Donald Trump, what Ayotte and Sununu are hoping is that you will also vote for them, that you're not going to skip them on the ballot. And so that is what I think we're going to have to look at, to see how many people vote for Trump but don't vote for Ayotte, do vote for Sununu, and that's how we'll be able to compare.
Well, it is interesting. I mean, in talking to people in the wake of Kelly Ayotte's, you know, sort of break with Trump, some people who are staunch Trump supporters would say, oh, you know, can't abide Ayotte. She's doing this. And then, you know, you talk to them for a few minutes and you say, really? Like, you're really willing to do this over this? And, you know, they tend to soften and say, well, no, I probably will end up voting for her, but I don't really want to.
Right. Like, is someone going to go into the ballot box and vote for Donald Trump and Maggie Hassan? I don't see that happening.
All right. Why don't we go to the phones? David is on the line from Keene. Good morning, David.
Hi. I was just going to ask the panel, like some people who are feminists will vote for Hillary Clinton, and then some that don't like Hillary Clinton might vote for Jill Stein. But then Jill Stein said she thinks Donald Trump is better than Hillary, which might take the wind out of their sails to some degree. And I'm just wondering what y'all think about what Jill Stein said in that regard. Thanks.
All right, David. Is anyone familiar with that purported comment by Jill Stein? I am not. So, you know, I guess we'll punt on that one, David. But, you know, the question about whether Jill Stein, you know, Gary Johnson might be siphoning away votes from, you know, either Clinton or Trump, you know, may remain relevant depending on how tight this race is. I mean, the recent polls do show Hillary Clinton enjoying an advantage in New Hampshire. And to that effect, we have an email from somebody saying, hello, I'm a left-leaning independent. I will never vote for Trump. I don't want to vote for Hillary Clinton. I want to write in Bernie Sanders. But if the polls are close, I will vote for Hillary. That's coming from Anne. Right now, the polls show that Hillary Clinton enjoys, you know, depending on the poll, a decent edge here in New Hampshire. You know, there's time for those polls to change. I guess we'll see. Tell us what you think. This is the weekly New Hampshire News Roundup on NHPR. I'm Josh Rogers. Join us. The exchange number is 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange at NHPR or find us on Facebook or Twitter. You know, the caller in this email brings up, you know, third-party candidates, and it's not simply at the presidential level that those may have an effect. You know, we have the first congressional district race between, you know, incumbent Frank Ginta, challenger and former Congressperson Carol Shea Porter, and we have Sean O'Connor in that race, an independent from Bedford. And, you know, they debated this week on WGIR as well. And, like, why don't we take a quick taste of that?
I want to thank Mr. O'Connor for being here today. I welcome him to this process. And again, I wish that the woman, Carol Shea Porter, who's been running for 10 years, was willing to participate in these debates. But it's a shame that she's not.
All right. That was Congressman Frank Ginta on WGIR during a debate with Sean O'Connor. Carol Shea Porter declined to participate in that debate. You know, Frank Ginta said he welcomed Sean O'Connor in that race. I think that's an understatement, probably, given the dynamics there, Dean.
Yeah, I don't have a sense yet of how O'Connor is polling, but certainly, you know, he has positioned himself as a progressive. He certainly has a very kind of what feels like a very personal conflict with Carol Shea Porter that started a while back with the Democratic Party and sort of claims and counterclaims. You know, and if it's a close race, and you know, even if he gets a couple of points, that could be problematic for her. I think we'll get a better sense once we see some polling. But you know, his campaign seems to be active. I see emails; they're sending out email blasts and whatnot.
He paid a visit to the folks at the union leader, didn't he, Trump?
We sat down with him for an hour in an extended interview where we talked about all kinds of issues. And I've done dozens of these, and I have to say that he really blew my socks off. He had an incredible backstory where he was living on Social Security as a teenager, helping his disabled father. He ended up going to Harvard Law and Business School at the same time before starting a multi-million-dollar company and selling it for millions and millions of dollars and moving to Bedford. So we haven't done tons of research on him, but just sitting down with him across the table, he certainly seemed like a good candidate.
So we shall see where that goes, and we shall hear more about Weekly New Hampshire News Roundup after a break. This is the Weekly New Hampshire News Roundup on NHPR. I'm Josh Rogers. Join us. The exchange number is 1-800-892-6477. Email at exchange at nhpr.org or find us, of course, on Facebook and Twitter. And, you know, we had a caller before the break who wanted our take on a quote by Jill Stein, and Trent's been doing some crack research here. What did you learn?
I just did a quick Google search about Jill Stein endorsing Donald Trump for president, and Snopes, their mission is to kind of root out internet rumors. They rated this as completely false.
Okay, make of that what you will. Why don't we go back to the phones? We've got more callers on the line. We'll go to Jerome in Manchester.
Yeah, good morning. How are you?
How are you?
Good, thanks. Purposes of complete disclosure, I'm a male in his mid-50s, have raised a family, and I'm a business person, lifelong New Hampshire resident, and I'm a Democrat. But I'm more of a moderate Democrat. I have voted for Republicans in the past. who I've known to be good, credible, caring people. And there's a certain standard, a certain test, a minimum threshold they have to cross. And to the person who sent in the email about maybe writing a person's name if the polls weren't too close in the presidential election race, I think that's loaded with a lot of risk, too much risk when it comes to this candidate for president. You know, Romney was a decent, caring human being. You could disagree with him on policy, maybe on style, but the fact of the matter is he wasn't dangerous. He wasn't off his rocker. And it's so obvious, it should be obvious to everyone, that it's too much risk not to go out and vote for Hillary Clinton. And I'm not a Hillary Clinton. This will be the first time I vote for Hillary Clinton, the first time.
So did you vote in the primary?
I voted Obama.
Did you vote in the New Hampshire
primary? I voted for Bernie Sanders. I voted for Bernie Sanders, and stylistically, you might say Hillary's not someone I align myself with naturally. But the bottom line is that she does have a breadth of knowledge and experience. I think the reports coming in recently, I think it was the editorial writers who endorsed Clinton in the past couple of days with the Washington Post, I guess it was. I mean, their argument is very, you know, certainly resonates with me. It's just too much risk to go for Trump. And the fact of the matter is Clinton does have the history and breadth of experience that could be potentially very, very beneficial to our country.
All right. Again, thank you, Jerome. Loud and clear.
Someone who's not, I'm not in love with Hillary, but I'll tell you right now, the choice is abundantly clear. You got to turn out and vote.
Okay. Jerome's not in love with Hillary, but it's going to go that way on election day. Kevin in Bedford, good morning.
Yes, good morning. Longtime listener. I love your show. If I had a chance to ask anyone who says I have to think about my daughters, I have a daughter. And I've talked to her about this, but where Senator Ayotte goes, I wouldn't be able to defend my vote for Donald Trump. I haven't heard one female voter who's voting for Hillary defend how they will tell their daughters that they voted for her. Going from Hillary's attack on the women who allegedly were abused by her husband up to selling the Secretary of State's office by the hour. You know, callers saying Hillary has a breadth of experience. Okay, yes, we got the Iran deal. That was a sweet deal, and you could go on and on. We need a change. And Donald Trump cannot get into office and do all these things that they say he's going to do by himself. Okay, he's going to have advisors, militaries, et cetera. He is not a one-man wrecking show. I'll take your comments offline.
All right, thank you, Kevin. Edwina and Wilton. What do you have to say this morning? I got a lot of calls. It's good.
Oh, good morning. Can you hear me okay?
Certainly.
Hard to tell when I'm in the car. I'm running for state rep, the Republican ticket in Wilton, District 4, a tiny four-town district. And I just want people to remember that other people besides Trump and Hillary are running, and we're following the Republican platform very closely, and we want lower taxes, and there's all sorts of other things going on.
I mean, obviously, you're running, Edwina, for state rep, a small but noble position, no doubt. But are you finding, you know, Donald Trump being on the ticket to be an impediment running as a Republican? Okay, Edwina, I hope she wasn't driving when she was talking. Why don't we go to Dave in Sandwich?
Hi.
Good morning.
Good morning. My comment is this. We often hear in the media that Hillary Clinton has low approval ratings and high distrust figures among Americans. And I certainly believe, and I wondered if the panel thinks, that there's no other candidate for president ever who has gone against a more sustained, long-term, and purposeful negative marketing and media campaign. I mean, over 30 years from Whitewater to the impeachment to everything else. I mean, this woman has had every single rock in the book thrown at her in public for 30 years. I don't think there's anything else like it. I don't think it's even close.
So are you,
that's my comment.
So are you supportive of Secretary Clinton?
I am, yeah. I mean, I think there's certainly a Clinton machine, political machine, and I think that political machines exist for a reason. Because politics is big and dirty, and I think we all know that. But to, I even think that a president that we elect needs to have that machine. I would make that point.
All right, Dave, thank you. So, Dean, what do you make? Do you think that a lot of voters accept the premise that, as Dave said, politics are big and dirty and that sometimes a political machine is necessary?
Well, it's interesting just listening to the sequence of calls that we just went through. We really heard kind of all sides of the issue in terms of how people are trying to grapple with the nominees of the two major parties. You know, the argument that Dave was just talking about is the one that Hillary Clinton has made on a number of occasions, that the reason why she has high unfavorabilities is because of this sustained attack that she and Bill Clinton have undergone. You remember her famous comments about the vast right-wing conspiracy. You know, she would point to this, you know, Bannon and Bossie and some of the other people running the Trump campaign. They go way back in terms of their hatred for the Clintons. So that's been her argument all along. And you know, she said it has sort of toughened her up. And she's even suggested that that's sort of one reason why she maybe sometimes seems a little bit aloof from voters, or maybe is not quite as connecting not quite as directly as she would like to, that it's just sort of she's a little more cautious now. But we've certainly heard that argument. And, you know, the Clintons have been a political powerhouse for decades, and she's got a big organization this time around. That's just sort of the nature of presidential campaigns. In some sense, Trump is a little unusual, kind of doing this a little bit with a smaller group of advisors and less of a big organization. And I think there are pros and cons to each approach.
Well, when I've been talking to voters lately, I mean, I certainly hear a lot of, panoramic revulsion, I guess I could call it, for you know, the spectrum of options at the presidential level, more than I've heard in other elections. But, Ellie, you've talked to a lot of voters. What are you hearing on that front? Or are you hearing people sort of gravitate towards, you know, their sort of North Stars as we get closer to voting?
Right. I mean, definitely the dynamic has changed since the primary, where people were looking, you know, people were gravitating to the quote, honesty and integrity of somebody like Bernie Sanders. And that was very appealing to a lot of voters. I mean, now that it's down to Clinton and Trump and third party candidates, yesterday I talked to a voter that said pretty much the exact same thing that Dave, our caller, said, which was, I am a longtime supporter of Hillary Clinton. I do think she has some trust issues with the American people. But, you know, I think that ultimately, when you've been in politics this long and you have such a big political organization, you know, there is secrecy and there is paranoia. And I just, you know, she said, I don't necessarily forgive all of the Clintons for everything. But, you know, I kind of understand that that's the world that they live in. And I'm OK with that. I've kind of squared myself with that. You know, other voters, I think that sort of the kind of the counterbalance to the argument about Clinton's trustworthiness and secrecy is just voters that say, you know, there is that argument that being in politics for so long is kind of a drag on her candidacy. But then there are plenty of voters that say, you know what, she's the most experienced. I want that in a president.
All right. Tell us what you think. The number is 1-800-892-6477. Dave is on the line from Henniker. Good day, Dave. Okay.
I'm a candidate for the state representative office from Henniker and Bradford. And I've been going around in both towns, and I'm finding a lot of people who are willing to consider a Democrat in my position for state representative because they're so turned off by the person that they have at the top of the Republican Party.
So they're stating that to you in explicit terms? They're saying, I normally don't vote Democrat, but I'll consider you because I'm not wild about Trump?
Yes, and not just the other people who are Democrats. They're just very concerned about a party that have a person like Trump at the head. Now, they have favorite people that they'll vote for who are Republicans, but they're not super conservative.
All right, Dave, you're breaking up, but an interesting point that the presidential race is actually trickling down into that most parochial of races, the state rep, where districts tend to vote one way or the other, but you know, oftentimes somebody who's known locally can kind of buck partisan tides, at least sometimes. And why don't we go to Kevin? I'm not Karen in Portsmouth. Sorry.
That's a good point that you bring up about what impact will the national races have on the New Hampshire House and Senate. Democrats think that Trump is going to essentially trickle down to the point of destroying the Republican Party in New Hampshire, and that Democrats will pick up 17, 18 seats in the Senate, which would be unbelievable.
Yeah. I mean, trickle down is the words I use, but I mean, maybe that's the wrong kind of water comparison. I mean, it's really more just a wave
waterfall.
Overwhelming overwhelming redistricting, overwhelming You know, a lot of times people – sometimes people know who they're voting for at the state rep level. Oftentimes they don't. Karen in Portsmouth, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I had a response to the caller, Kevin, and he asked how a parent could justify to a child Hillary Clinton's actions. And my response to that is that I am a parent, and I do talk to my son about these issues a lot, and I don't agree with him about Hillary Clinton, you know, selling the State Department. I think that if you get beyond CNN and Fox and sort of the partisan news and read those emails and really inform yourself, I don't see that there. And I think that's media spin.
So have you been supportive of Secretary Clinton for some time, a longtime admirer?
No. I was Bernie supporter, worked for Bernie, very passionately for Bernie. But I will support Hillary Clinton because of her experience and because I have done the research to look at this, and I don't see the comments that people are making about her are accurate.
Okay, Karen, thank you. Interesting. You know, obviously, I will say, you know, we're getting a lot more calls on this Friday than most, and I do think it's illustrative of the degree to which, you know, the sort of Trump-Clinton choice is really mobilizing people to comment at a minimum. And why don't we go to Sarah in Concord? Good morning, Sarah.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to reiterate the point that was made by, I forget which person on the panel, about Donald Trump having an effect on more local races like state reps and state senate. And I could even bring Kelly Ayotte into that example. As a registered independent, I've always had a sense from her as a candidate that her hand was forced to support Trump just because this has been such a divisive campaign. Everybody's sort of been forced to align and take sides almost begrudgingly. And I think it definitely is having an effect on our smaller races just because a lot of politicians have been sort of had their hands forced to be more vocal for candidates that they quite possibly would never have supported if they weren't running.
Mm. Are there any races you're looking at in particular?
I am an avid Hillary supporter. I voted for her in the primary as well. I'm grateful that Bernie Sanders ran because he brought so many great issues to the forefront, and I feel like he influenced Hillary Clinton's campaign significantly. I'm not sure how I feel about our Senate race. I'm sort of leaning towards Kelly Ayotte because of her experience. And I, honestly, as long as there's a woman in that seat, I'll be happy.
Well, you may get that. All right. Thank you for calling, Sarah. Interesting. I mean, you know, the whole question of ticket splitting is one we're all looking at. And, you know, Dean, I mean, the history of ticket splitting from a political science perspective, like, you know, what do we know about the inclinations, or is it sort of every election's a little different?
Well, I think it does vary. I mean, you see these trends over a decade or several decades. You know, there are some periods in our history where sort of the coattail effect and partisan voting is very strong, and other periods where the candidates all seem sort of detached from each other. You know, the suggestion is that this election, because of sort of the unique nature of the top of the debate at the top of the ticket, that we may see more ticket splitting than we've seen in a long time, significantly more. We have not seen a lot of that in recent years.
All right. We've got a minute more. Give us a call if you want, 1-800-892-6477. Trent?
I think that last caller was kind of what we've been talking about for this hour, was that people are saying, I definitely can't support Hillary Clinton. I definitely can't support Donald Trump. They're either on the fence one way or the other, but they are still looking to try and figure out, am I going to vote for Hassan or Ayotte? What am I going to do about my local state rep race? And so as much as people are saying, oh, Trump is going to have this huge impact on the local races, I think that New Hampshire voters have the experience and the training to realize I don't have to vote for just Republicans or just Democrats, and I can make my own decisions. And I think they're going to do that.
New Hampshire voters experienced and trained, according to Trent. All right, it's this that time of the show. What are we going to be looking at next week? Obviously, a lot of politics coming up.
Yes. For us in the New Hampshire, coming up in the New Hampshire Sunday News, we're going to be looking at a story. Two police officers were shot in Manchester earlier this year by a mentally ill person, and our reporter Mark Hayward looked into how is it possible that he got this gun. And we looked into some cases where people – we found 10 cases where people were able to get guns. These people are domestic abusers, felons, drug addicts. And we're looking at a loophole that exists in state law that allowed them to get these guns. So it'll be a really fascinating read coming up in the New Hampshire Sunday News.
All right. Ella, what are you going to be focusing on?
Well, quick plug for the Concord Monitor weekend paper. I've got something coming out.
We love newspapers.
Yes.
So go right ahead.
I've got something coming out on medical marijuana and the problems that veterans have accessing it with the federal VA health system. So I've got that. And coming up next week, a lot more politics, looking at the state governor's race.
Dean?
We assume it's going to happen. Who knows at this point? Third presidential debate on Wednesday night at the UNLV. Looking forward to that.
All right. Have a good weekend, everybody. Thanks for joining us again. Our guests were Trent Spinner, the New Hampshire Union Leader, Ella Nelson, Concord Monitor, Dean Spiliotis, Southern New Hampshire University. Have a good one, everybody.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. Hey, if you like what you heard, spread the word. Please give us a review on iTunes to help other listeners find us. And thanks.